The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and this is a Sunday roundup. This morning, Andrew Marr spoke to Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland. A major feature of the interview was the continuing row between Sturgeon and her predecessor, Alex Salmond. Salmond was put on trial for multiple allegations of sexual misconduct in early 2020, after which he was acquitted of all charges. A Holyrood inquiry is being conducted into the handling of the complaints made against Salmond, who has accused Sturgeon of misleading the Scottish Parliament.
Your predecessor and former friend has said that your account of this is, and I quote, simply untrue, manifestly untrue, untenable. Parliament has been repeatedly misled. What did you think when you saw those words?
I don't accept that, and I will refute that vigorously. Look, questions have been raised about my handling of sexual harassment claims made about my predecessor. It's right that I am properly scrutinised on that. I had hoped that I would be before the committee conducting this inquiry on Tuesday this week. Unfortunately, that's been delayed by a couple of weeks. But I'll sit before that committee and I will refute all of those accusations and I will set out my account of what happened, given the very difficult situation that I faced. And people can make their own judgments on that. What I will never do is apologise for doing everything I could to make sure that claims, complaints about sexual harassment were investigated, that they weren't simply swept under the carpet because of the seniority and the powerful position of the person who was subject to them.
Your spokesman said that Mr. Salmond is, and I quote, spinning false conspiracy theories. Do you agree with your spokesman?
Well, what I do certainly sometimes reflect on is that at times I appear to be simultaneously accused of colluding with Mr. Salmond to somehow cover up accusations of sexual harassment on the one hand, and then on the other hand of being part of some dastardly conspiracy to bring him down.
Do you agree with your own spokesperson that he is spinning false conspiracy theories or not?
There are false conspiracy theories being spun about this, and in that,
coming from Alex Salmond.
By Alex Salmond, by people around him, you can draw your own conclusions around that. But what I would say is this, what is forgotten in all of that are the women who brought forward these complaints.
If it is proved to be true that you misled Parliament, you would resign, wouldn't you? You would have to resign.
I did not mislead Parliament, so I'm not going to speculate on what might happen in the future.
In today's least surprising news, Sturgeon also reaffirmed her commitment to a future referendum on Scottish independence and threw down the gauntlet to Boris Johnson.
Because I had Boris Johnson on the show a little while ago, and you may have noticed he thought there should be a 40-year gap between the last independence referendum and any future one. What's your response?
Well, it's Robert Burns' birthday tomorrow, our annual Burns Day, and when I hear Boris Johnson talk about this, I bring to mind a Burns poem, you know, Cowering timorous beastie, what a panic's in thy breastie. He's frightened of democracy. The polls now show that a majority of people in Scotland want independence. If the SNP win the Scottish election in a few months' time on a proposition of giving the people that choice, then what Democrat could rightly stand in the way of that? Boris Johnson clearly just fears the verdict and the will of the Scottish people.
You say in a few months' time, therefore you're not going to delay these elections because of the coronavirus pandemic.
I see no reason why the election should be delayed, but rightly and properly in a democracy, it shouldn't simply be a decision for government. Okay. That would be a cross-party decision. We have legislation that had recently passed to put contingency arrangements in place. We might have to do the election differently, more postal voting, for example, but I see no reason why it shouldn't go ahead at this stage. Many countries have had elections over the course of the pandemic.
If you do win well in those elections, will you have an advisory referendum, whatever Westminster says, a homemade Scottish referendum, yes or no?
I want to have a legal referendum. That's what I'm going to seek the authority of the Scottish people for in May. And if they give me that authority, that's what I intend to do. Have a legal referendum to give people in Scotland the right to choose. That's democracy. It's not about what I want or about what Boris Johnson wants. It's about what the people of Scotland want. And the increasing evidence is that they want independence.
The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, had more good news on the rollout of the coronavirus vaccines and discussed the challenges of the new variants with Stephen Dixon, who is filling in for Sophie Ridge.
The vaccine rollout here is going so well. Over 5 million people have been vaccinated. As of this morning, 3/4 of all over 80s in the UK have been vaccinated, which is absolutely brilliant progress. Similar number of care homes, around 3/4. And in fact, we've vaccinated more people in just the last 3 days than France, for instance, has in the entire history of this disease. So the vaccination program is going very well. And at the same time, there are new variants that you mentioned, particularly in South Africa and Brazil, the two that we're particularly concerned about, that might have a lower response to the vaccine. Now, we don't know the degree of that. We've been really clear that is something we don't know, but we are looking into, both at Portendown and also in South Africa. We actually have a trial in the field to see how well the Oxford vaccine works in South Africa. And we're working closely with our counterparts there. But in the meantime, we've got to have a precautionary principle that says, let's not bring these new variants back to the UK. And further than that, the new variant I really worry about is the one that is out there but hasn't been spotted. Because, you know, Brazil and South Africa, like us, have a decent size genomic sequencing program. And these genomic sequences are important because there's how you spot a new variant. Now, we do about half of all the genomic sequencing in the world. It's one of the reasons why we could pick up the new variant that was first discovered in Kent. But there's probably others elsewhere that simply haven't been picked up because the country doesn't have that genomic sequencing service. Now, I want to see our capability actually made available across the world so that others, if they see a sharp spike like we saw in Kent, can send their samples and we can find out if it's a new variant.
Hancock defended the approach of Public Health England to administer the second dose of the Pfizer vaccine after 12 weeks and not 6 weeks, as the British Medical Association has called for.
People that I know who've had the vaccine are delighted that they've had it, but there are very real concerns now about this policy of delaying the second dose to 12 weeks, where it was 3 to 4 weeks. I mean, the scientists themselves are saying, look, we just don't know what impact that will have on the efficacy of the vaccine when you're looking at the double dose with that sort of gap in between.
Well, what we do know is that this policy is going to save lives. And the reason we know that is because so long as there is decent efficacy after the first dose, and we know we have a high degree of confidence that that's the case, then in a situation where there's only a limited supply, because we're able to deliver this and inject this at the rate at which it's being manufactured, you know, and the NHS is getting it out as quickly as it comes in that situation, you want to get as many people to have as much protection as possible, as quickly as possible. So the way I put it is this: if you have two grandparents who are in their 70s or 80s, and you have two doses of vaccine, you obviously would want each of them to have one dose when you know that one dose is effective, rather than one to have the full two-dose schedule, and then the other to have no protection at all. And so that's the reason that we've made this decision, and it is essentially because this is the way to save most lives fastest, and that, so you can totally understand why that's the approach that we've taken.
The Shadow Home Secretary, Nick Thomas-Symonds, criticised the government's preparations for combating coronavirus at the borders.
Nobody could say that the situation at our borders is satisfactory or that there is sufficient protection in place for our people against the different strains that could be coming from around the world. So we need now to put additional protections in place. We do need that effective border testing regime, and we also need an effective quarantining regime, which we've not had. The government did not introduce a comprehensive quarantining regime until June last year. This government was an international outlier. If you go back to May last year, it was only the UK, Iran, Luxembourg, and the US Virgin Islands that had no travel protections in place. It was too slow. It was put into place in June. It isn't effective at the moment. We need that additional quarantining protection in place. I would support, for example, the introduction of the use of hotels. But above all, we need a comprehensive system and plan from the government and stop moving from one chaotic situation to another.
Well, hotels, I mean, it's been talked about before and other countries are doing it. Are you saying that everyone who arrives in the UK should be put into a hotel and forcibly quarantined for, I don't know, what would it be, 10 days or so?
It does need to be a comprehensive system. Clearly, you would have to have a very different system for hauliers, for lorries crossing the English Channel. That would have to be obviously very different. But in terms of travellers arriving in the United Kingdom, you would need to have that comprehensive system.
Northern Ireland's First Minister, Arlene Foster, reacted to the news that an opinion poll for the Sunday Times showed that just over half of people asked thought that there should be a referendum on Northern Ireland's status as part of the UK within the next 5 years.
This must have you worried, surely.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to remember that this is an internet poll, so that always comes with a health warning. But whatever about that, I think it is very disappointing to see that some nationalist parties across the United Kingdom, during a time of national crisis, when I'm focusing every working hour on trying to save lives, are actually trying to take this opportunity to talk about constitutional politics. I mean, we all know how divisive a border poll would be. And for us in Northern Ireland, what we have to do at the moment is all come together to fight against COVID and not be distracted by what would be absolutely reckless at this time. It's not that I'm dead against it. I can argue for United Kingdom every day of the week because, of course, the arguments are rational, they're logical, and they will win through. And I mean, nobody's suggesting, and not even this poll is suggesting, that we would lose in that if there was a border poll. But of course, it would be incredibly divisive.
And finally, Dixon asked Foster if some of the difficulties that Northern Ireland has faced since Great Britain left the EU single market and customs union meant that she should have shown more flexibility in the past.
But do you wish you'd backed Theresa May's deal?
No, absolutely not, because, of course, Theresa May's deal would have left us in the EU customs union and indeed the single market forever. If you remember, the Attorney General, Geoffrey Cox, at that time said that we would not have any escape route from any EU customs union or indeed the single market. So I think people are having a little bit of revisionism around Theresa May's deal, but they should revisit it and see what it meant for us in Northern Ireland. And I think they will come to the conclusion that it certainly was not a better deal.
That's all for this week. I'm Cindy Yu, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this episode, do subscribe to our daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.